Thank you. We're not going to do an official gavel or anything. It's not that kind of meeting, but it's welcome everyone to the first meeting of the Aurora Economic Opportunities Analysis Technical Advisory Committee. I'm Joseph Schaefer, the Planning Commission Chair, and I think we should just go around and let everyone introduce themselves. Why don't we do Zoom, and I'm not sure what order the Zoom people appear to the other Zoom people, but on the top left, we'll start with Jerry Johnson, who's sort of our master of ceremonies for this process.
Yeah, I'm Jerry Johnson with Johnson Economics. We're leading the consulting team on this work. Apologize for not being in person. For some reason, I had it as a Zoom call. Didn't realize they'd have so many people at your city hall. So next time, I'll make sure to get over there.
Okay, and then just going clockwise, Ted, would you like to say hello?
He's muted.
Go.
He's got it.
Yeah, this is Ted Millar from over at the TLM Holdings property adjacent to the airport.
And then Kurt.
I'm Kurt Fisher. I'm an associate planner with the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments, and Aurora is one of the nine cities that I serve in our three-county jurisdiction.
And I would also add that Kurt is sort of the keeper of this file. Everything that we're doing is part of a formal land use file that's maintained by the city. So if anybody wants to submit something for the record or whatever, that's the way to do it. Okay, next we have Randall. Oh.
It's the wrong button. Any, you're muted.
Took his photo
off. Oh, here we go.
There he is.
Okay.
You're still muted there, Randy.
We got your picture back, but we can't hear you.
He's new at this.
He's not getting a help from the gentleman next to him.
Okay. Well, so do you know?
Yeah, that's Pat McNamee and Randy Myers. Randy's a neighbor of the airport for since the 50s.
Okay.
And flew an airline and FedEx captain and is now retired and in Hawaii visiting Pat. Pat
okay.
flew with me out of the airport in the early 70s. He ran a business there.
Okay.
Now flies for, or just retired from the airlines living in Hawaii.
Okay. Kelly, you're next.
Well, hi, everyone. I'm Kelly Weiss. I'm the Economic Development Program Manager with Marion County.
All right. And then Matt.
Yeah, hi. Matt Lorenzen here representing the city of Wilsonville. I'm the city's Economic Development Manager. Thanks.
Okay. And then Alex.
Hey, good afternoon, everybody. Alex Thomas, Oregon Department of Aviation. Planning and Programs Manager, recently took the transitioned into the position, I should say, that Heather Peck was previously in for quite some time. So I've only been in the position for a couple of months, been learning a lot, but still have a ton to learn. So happy to be here and be part of this. Thank you.
Okay, and then that's apparently everyone that we have on Zoom. So why don't we go around the room here, Bruce?
Bruce Bennett, I've had Aurora Aviation at the Aurora Airport since 19. We're property owners and business owners since 1968.
My name is Tyler Mesker, small business owner here in Aurora, but also a landowner across from the Aurora Airport.
I'm Stu Peterson with McAdam Forbes, a commercial real estate broker partner at the company.
Philip Mandel, in this context, I'm a pilot, aircraft owner, flight instructor. Spend a lot of time in and out of Aurora Airport and member of Columbia Aviation Association.
Jim Stewart, I'm on the Planning Commission and a resident of Aurora.
Bill Grout, citizen of Aurora on the Planning Commission.
Stuart Rogers on staff here, City Reporter.
Julie Sixkiller, resident of Aurora. I am a retired business owner, but I do have holdings. They're all in commercial and industrial real estate.
Brian Asher, I'm the mayor here in Aurora, own a small construction company.
Okay, thank you everyone. And Jerry, I'm gonna turn the meeting over to you. Knock yourself out.
All right, thanks. So we've sent around some materials. Hopefully people had a little bit of chance to review this. I need to get a screen sharing on if I could, or if you want to do it there, Joseph.
Well, you can't see him, but Stuart is driving the computer.
Oh, Stuart. So
he'll set that up for you.
All right. First of all, this is an advisory committee, so keep in mind we're going to be presenting things to you for response, but you know, we really want your response. The value of these meetings is to get feedback and direction from the advisory committee. You're not just an audience. We've actually selected everybody in this committee to try to get some real meaningful feedback to help us understand what we're seeing and make sure we've got this right. Oh, here, good. I do have screen sharing now. All right. So I'm going to do, first of all, is walk through this thing. Walk through a presentation we put together. The very old Aurora photos.
Cool.
Yeah, these are really cool.
Where's your asphalt?
All right. We walked through some of the agenda first. We went through introductions already. The objectives of the meeting are really to explain to you the process we'll be going through. This is still early. We haven't done much analysis whatsoever. There's been some initial work on the BOI that's still subject to refinement. We're still waiting for some of the raw data on employment from the state of Oregon. There's a lot of work that's still going to be going right now, but this is a talk about what an EOA. EOA, we refer to that all the time, is Economic Opportunities Analysis. This is something the Department of Land Conservation Development actually requires jurisdictions to do, which is the idea is to align on Goal 9, which is economic development for the state land use system, to align your goals and objectives with your actual planning realities on the ground. For an economic opportunities analysis is to identify what you think economic conditions are, what you think economic growth potential is, to make sure, understand what the jurisdiction's goals and objectives are, what they'd like to see out of their economic growth or development, and then take a look at your land use system, your inventory, your planning to make sure that you're basically in support of that. So you decide what you want to be, you see what's reasonable in the future, and then you try to make sure that you've actually got the land assets, entitlements, and everything in place to actually realize that vision so that's all aligned. Then we're going to talk about the buildable land inventory a little bit, just for an introduction of how that's done and some of the initial things that we're coming up with. Actually, we're not coming up with, Kurt's coming up with, I believe. And then we'll be talking about having discussion, hopefully, on your economic objectives, basically what the city aspires to be on an economic development perspective. Take a look at some of target industries, how they're developed, what might be the things and the next steps and lay out where this group's going to go. Right now, we've got this scheduled for 2 hours. It doesn't have to be 2 hours. You know, we just want to make sure we've got enough time in case it goes long. It all depends on sort of the level of discussion and feedback. So as I sort of laid out again, and we keep iterating over again, you have to decide what your local economic goals and your target industries are. What do you want to be? You have to come up with a forecast of your economic growth. So you take a look at trends, you look at opportunities, you look at things in the broader region as well as what you've seen locally, and come up with basically a forecast over a 20-year horizon. All the planning things are typically done over 20-year horizons of what you expect your employment in this area to be, look like in the future, by industry and associated land use requirements, real estate requirements, land use requirements. Then you take a look at an inventory of what you have as far as land assets, what your entitlements are, what's within your urbanizable areas, what's outside of your urbanizable areas, You try to reconcile those and make sure you've got adequate land of the right characteristics to support the anticipated growth. And, you know, eventually available to the city. You come up with new form policies or action items to basically help realize that, to take that forward, to make sure that you can actually achieve what your goals are. And then you update your comprehensive plan addressing the goal 9. Again, this becomes the economic element. When the state, the land use plans were originally done, a lot of people's economic elements were like one paragraph. In a lot of smaller towns, it was support the mill. We'll go back and take a look at one of these smaller towns 20 years later. The mill's been closed for 9 of those years. And you need a new economic development strategy. These are a little bit more, actually a lot more comprehensive as far as taking a look at what your opportunities are. But it's really a process. So you've got to decide what you want to be and decide if you've got things in place to achieve that. And for both the staff and the TAC members, we really need your guys' help in reading tea leaves. One of the things that we'll do is we'll collect a lot of data, and in later meetings, we'll be presenting data that we're seeing. And what we'll want to do is get as much feedback as possible from you on what that data means. We can give you what we think our initial interpretation is. You know your communities better than we do. We've got a lot of neighboring communities involved in this committee as well. And it's important because, you know, for better or worse, to some extent, for economic development pieces, we're sort of all working as a broader regional system. And, you know, we may have development in Aurora that basically relies on hotel supply in Wilsonville or Camas, or not Camas, in Canby. And so we just need to understand what's happening in the broader region, understand what's along the I-5 corridor and what we're seeing on the margins, so we understand what's plausible and realistic for the city of Aurora to aspire to. Again, there's this issue in aspiring to things. You can be aspirational. It actually calls out in the rulemaking that jurisdictions can be aspirational, which means you can dream of bigger things than maybe the direct forecast may indicate, but you have to ground those in some reality. So if you think somehow that you're going to be, you know, if your aspiration is to become a major seaport, we would probably say that would not be grounded in reality for Aurora, right? Now, if your aspiration is for a fulfillment center, we may say, well, you're still a little bit far from I-5, but it's not crazy, right? It's certainly pushing the envelope. But the idea is basically to make that distinction, the fine line between vision and hallucination, where you're thinking forward, you're trying to be positive or negative. And again, we have jurisdictions. We talk about what you want to be, and we've had jurisdictions that really want nothing to happen. And you can set up your planning system so nothing happens as well. All these things are achievable. So to some extent, you need to decide what you want to be. We recently worked in the city of North Plains, and North Plains was actually very interested in getting a more balanced tax base for North Plains that included a greater degree of, you know, commercial industrial development relative to the residential as a more sustainable tax base from a fiscal perspective. Those types of things you can take a look at as well. A lot of times it's just trying to match up employment opportunities so your local residents have local employment opportunities. Reduces the need to commute and is a benefit to your local residents. And sometimes, you know, it's attracting commercial retail tenants that would be valued by your local residents, and they'd like to see them in town, and they see that as an amenity as well. All those things are possible. So we start talking about what you want to be. There's no set piece. A lot of places are very pro-development, but that doesn't mean that is the only option you can do as far as taking. You're not pro-growth or anti-growth. You can be many things. Sometimes you're very specific about the type of growth you want. And we've had that with coastal communities we've worked with, that they may decide what type of retail they're looking for and what sort of things they'd like to see or not, you know, to encourage and not encourage. So for the TAC, we're hoping you to attend meetings. We're only going to have 2 more meetings, which we'll be providing the information to take a look at. Again, we want as much feedback as possible. Less of me talking, more of you talking. we want you to advise us on the local economic conditions, issues, objectives. You know, what do you guys see? What do you guys want to do? We'll want to get review and feedback of work products. We'll not, a lot of times we'll present them during these meetings, but you'll have, you know, time throughout this time. Anytime someone on the committee wants to reach out or contact us, hopefully maybe through Joseph, and ask questions or clarifications or, you know, help work on the project or provide assistance, we're open to it at all times. And also to inform other community members and partners about the project. One of the things we run into in outreach and economic development is typically it doesn't get a lot of attention in the local community because people don't care about it as much. If it's a transportation thing, if I'm messing with an interchange, everybody's very focused on it. If I'm talking about economic development and 20-year trends, no one really pays a lot of attention to it until it affects their property or their neighbor's property. And then suddenly they have a focus on it. I put off to the right, basically, this is actually an overview of basically a table of contents from a previous EOA, what tends to be in this. And this is really what's in our scope of work. So we've got kickoff meetings, economic trends analysis, the first piece. The second PAC meeting we'll be having, we'll be talking about the economic trends analysis and what we're seeing in the market. There'll be meetings in the interim and hopefully outreach to key stakeholders. If anybody really wants to make sure they have specific time on that, they should feel free to contact me directly as well. Conversion then of the trends to employment land needs analysis and required site types for the employment needs we have. And also taking a look at the buildable land inventory. We'll talk a little bit about that today because some of the, again, your buildable land inventory is relatively simple in the city of Aurora because city of Aurora has very few sites. So they're pretty easy to identify. And a lot of times the TAC can help us understand what's right or wrong with those sites. And so it's really useful for us. Then we start taking a look at reconciliation, what it looks like, sites needed, project, you know, the TAC meeting number three, we'll be going through the basic findings and what needs to happen. And then we develop an implementation plan, which is what do we do with this finding? If you find you have more than adequate employment land, you don't do much of anything. If you find you have a shortage of employment land, which happens quite often, then you've got to figure out what you can do about it, what are your alternatives. And develop some idea of how to achieve that. And then the final EOA is really the documents, presenting it to the city council, and it also has to go through to the county as well. So this is sort of a briefer, easier way to actually say what you do it. You basically, you look at your demand, your supply, reconcile them, figure out what your opportunities are, what you need to do, and then come up with implementation strategies to do something about it. We talked about this already. One of the things that you'll see in this is once we come up with employment forecasts by sector, we start converting that into real estate product types. So if I've got employment type in warehouse distribution, I'm going to need a warehouse distribution building, right? It's going to have certain configuration requirements. You can't put those in every site. It may need a minimum of 10 acres of land that has to be flat because warehouse distribution is really sensitive to slope. May have to be close, have direct access onto an arterial within, a half mile of a freeway interchange or something. They may have very specific requirements. And it's really important that you take a look at the employment fact forecast, turn those into site requirements based on the real estate needs you do. You actually need to house that employment and then come up with the land needs at the site level. It's one thing to take a look at the aggregate. And I think some of the early studies that were done, this was a mistake where you go through there and you say, I need, 100 acres of industrial land. But what I really need is I need 3 20-acre sites and, and if I need a 20-acre site, I can't substitute, 4 or 5-acre sites. That's not going to work for me. I need 20 acres contiguous. So I need to identify not just the demand in aggregate, but the demands by site types. So I have a better understanding of what needs to actually be in my inventory to accommodate these particular employers that I'm targeting or anticipating. We take a look at the employment forecast. You typically start with your current employment profile. The complication in the city of Aurora itself within the city limits is quite small, and within the urban growth boundary is quite small. So we'll probably be taking it a larger sort of sub area around the county, around the city to understand what's happening in that area. You can start with your current existing profile. You can apply to that. The industry projections is a safe harbor from Oregon Economic Development submarket forecasts and say that's what your growth rate. So if I've got, you know, 1,000 employees in one industry and I assume a 10% growth rate, that means 100 employees additional, then I can look use those growth rates as a safe harbor. I can also tie the employment growth to my population growth, and I'm allowed to do that as well. The population stuff now comes from PSU, so for better or worse, we can be tied with those. You don't have to stick with the safe harbors, though. If you do something outside of safe harbor, you just need to justify it and explain it. DLCD is actually quite good about listening to explanations, and a lot of communities have a lot of explanation, particularly smaller communities, because the trends don't mean as much in a small community because you're very small. And, you know, you add 10% growth, that may only be 5 employees in some industries. So the growth rates can really be misleading. And if you have a new firm locating in town, it can completely throw off these growth rates and they can become less reliable. We then adjust the growth forecast based on target industries. And we try to identify target industries. I don't know if I got a slide on this, but target industries will tend to identify based on what you currently have, what's growing regionally, what the state is targeting, what the county is targeting. The county's actually done a lot of economic development work already. You want to tie into their broader strategy as a sub-strategy for this area. And then through this TAC too. So if you guys identify particular industries, you think Aurora has either a strong probability of getting additional employment in or should really be targeting in the future, you can call those out. And if they're a reasonable industry, then we can throw them into a target industry and then make sure we have sites to accommodate those particular industries. We've worked in jurisdictions where they wanted a regional hospital. I mean, your demographics aren't right for that here, you know, but if it was a regional hospital type use, they have very specific site requirements. And you can say, we don't have a regional hospital. Since there is no regional hospital, there's no trends indicating we should have a regional hospital. But if we look at the demographics, we're close to supporting a regional hospital. So maybe that's plausible in the future, but we'll never get it if we don't have an 80-acre site with these characteristics that actually accommodates a regional hospital. So again, you identify your target industry, you identify what it needs, and then you try to make sure you can provide for it within your urbanizable area for the jurisdiction. And questions on all this stuff first, I should ask. I've been going for a long time, I apologize. I don't wanna, you know, get too far ahead of where anybody's following or they've got specific questions about how this process works.
Questions for Jerry?
What's a safe harbor forecast?
Okay, so safe harbor is basically means DLCD will let you do that and they can't appeal it and say you can't do that. So it's basically if I want to avoid any conflict, right? You can go through there and just say, I'm going to accept the growth rate that the state has assigned or anticipates for the next 10 years over my 20-year horizon and say, I'm going to just grow within the expected rates that the state's already forecasting. It's an easy way to do it. Or you can tie it to population growth. If your population is going to grow by 15% in the next 20 years, you can say my employment needs grow by 15%. They're really simple ratios. You can do that. It doesn't make for a great process, but you won't be appealed on that basis. So they may appeal you for something else, but they won't appeal you on the growth rates. So we normally throw that out there and we'll actually normally run those numbers because you may like those numbers and then it's easy, just take them. But if you want something different or you want to play with more in the target industries, I think we typically take the other approaches. I think Tony, did you have your hand up for a sec, or was that old, or was that Alex?
Alex.
Okay.
I did. It looked like somebody from Business Oregon was invited. I was just curious if you'd heard anything back from them, or if I could help get somebody from there to participate.
Yes, we did hear back from them, Alex. I forget the name of the person. We don't have anyone hear from them today, and I don't have the TAC list with me. But yes, they're involved, and you're encouraged to liaise with them as much as you would like. I'll figure out the right name and send it to you.
I got it here in the email list. So, okay, sounds good. Thank you.
All right, well, maybe we'll switch over to some of the BLIs, take a look at the inventory that you guys have, which there's very few times do I have a buildable land inventory in a jurisdiction that we can put it in a table like this. This is not final. I need to explain. These are some preliminary drafts open to the subject of things, but just take a look at what this looks like. First of all, you've got a total of, you know, less than 25 acres of buildable land out there right now within the city limits. And this is some basic mapping of what's sort of in here. And the extent people have better information, that's great. And we already had some comments on this, and maybe Joseph, you know this more than I do. You can see on the hatching, the vacant, the red hatching is vacant. The black hatching is considered redevelopable, which means the current improvement is not that intensive and it's likely you could redevelop to a different use within a 20-year horizon. A lot of your property is wet. You'll see in the map to the right, it takes a look at the wetlands and the impacts. You've got a lot of conflicts with slope and wetland on the sites available. Now, some of your sites look fine, but, you know, this is not atypical. When you get down to the last, you know, 20% of your land supply, a lot of times there's a reason some of these sites are still available.
Thanks, Jerry. I would add for everyone, many of you have heard it before, but we view this inventory as very much sort of an open source thing. Obviously, it's a small town, and some of us are very familiar with it. We reviewed it at planning. And, you know, suggested some edits, which Kurt has made. Kurt was aware of a few properties that are sort of in the pipeline for development. Applications are coming soon. But if you are aware of any property, in particular, you know, it's easy for us to look at an aerial photo and see what's vacant. But if you're aware of a property where, you know, you're brother knows the owner and they're thinking about redeveloping, that's the trickiest thing in these inventory is the ones that are already developed, but really, you know, chances are the building's going to come down and they're going to be ripe for redevelopment. Those are the hardest ones to find. So, you know, keep that in mind. Go ahead, Jerry.
Sorry, the really hard ones to find are the ones that have brownfield issues that nobody wants to talk about. They don't like to be put on maps anyways, but Sometimes people will take a look at one of these sites that's vacant and they'll know what's wrong with it.
Yes. And I'm not aware that we have any of those problems. I know one of the properties on your list there, the Hellhake property, there's a couple of tax lots that has recently gone through a cleanup with DEQ. And we anticipate getting an application for a new development pretty much any day now. You never know what you don't know. No. But I'm not aware of any other properties that are kind of held up for that reason.
Okay. It's good. It's all good. You know, it typically comes off with a broad range when you do the buildable land inventory and you start deducting things. You can deduct for slope. Right now, the slope set at more than 5%. Certain uses handle slope better than others. Industrial uses and retail have a little bit more trouble than residential. So employment uses, slope can be a big deal. This slope is only set at 5%. So that's a pretty modest slope. I've seen them, you know, take it to 7 or tends a little extreme, but you do have some slope, and where some of the slopes are is actually problematic. You see some of the slopes, like on this site, the slope, but the slope's right up against 99. So it's likely makes it more expensive to develop because you got to deal with the slope and the right off the road. And some of these, you know, your developable parcel is way in the back with the slope, your developable piece, which makes them pretty compromised. I don't know, do we have all the, you've got FEMA, wetlands, I don't know about, it's not showing a lot of conflicts here. I guess just a few up here on the north. Is that right now, Kurt?
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, so we're not that wet on these. These are pretty good on the wet side.
It's only showing, it's only showing the vacant properties to begin with. So there are other properties that are wet that wouldn't show up on the initial pass, probably.
Yep. So right now, does anyone have any particular comments on this that we, just to make sure we incorporate early? This isn't your last call. You can always take a look at this at home too and kick back and say, you know, there's a site maybe you should consider being on your inventory, or maybe we should take it off.
Jerry, I had a question.
I think Randall's trying to talk, but he's on mute, but he just may be talking to Patrick.
I think, was that Matt? Was that you chiming up, Matt?
Yeah, I wasn't sure if my technology was working. You can hear me okay?
Yeah.
Okay. Just a quick interjection. Your introduction of what an EOA is and all of that makes perfect sense. I'm familiar with it, of course. I'm just wondering, as we put our heads together here, is this exercise more to fulfill a regular requirement of the state of Oregon's land use system, or is this more of an aspirational exercise, or some combination perhaps?
Well, Joseph here, I would say it's both. I don't even know when the last time we did one is, but probably at least 20 years ago, and it was pretty perfunctory. But yes, the city has aspirations to grow and bring the airport into the city. The catch is that there's a gap. There's a quite a bit of land between the city and the airport. And when it comes to expanding the city, the airport has a lot of influence on what are suitable land uses around the airport. If that answers your question, Matt.
Yeah, I think so. And that's helpful context. So thank you.
Yeah, and that's one of the reasons we talk about doing the economic system a little broader than the city boundaries itself, which is really heavily retail and food service, is because you've got a lot of industrial activity out by the airport, which is sort of an entity that basically has a very different employment profile than the city itself. So trying to understand how that fits in, and if there's, you know, benefits to that as far as, you know, creating additional need for employment lands or additional economic development potential, just trying to understand that as well. All right, well, maybe we'll move beyond the BLI right now. These, I'm just so used to these having hundreds of sites and. I wanted to bring people's attention. You can get this online, which is useful, which is Marion County's 5-year strategic plan. It says adopted this month. I have no idea. Has it been adopted this month? That's on the cover page, but I wrote that down in December. So
no, in fact, it's funny. So we're working on adopting it. We just had our work session with the board a couple hours ago.
Okay.
So they can look at the draft with comments. But this is actually the old vision and mission
from
our current one. So we'll have a new vision and mission here in a month or so when we get it through adoption.
All right. Well, we definitely want to keep abreast of this and make sure we have the new one, Kelly.
Okay.
Obviously, you know, the DLC would really like the jurisdictions within the county to have visions that are consistent and supportive of the county's vision if the county's doing it. Probably the county would like that as well. So, again, we use this guiding documents to basically help understand and develop visions for the jurisdictions within the county to make sure it ties in and understand their role.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. I'm glad you guys are thinking in that way and we're able to collaborate.
Well, we like to stay with this county too. So now this piece, is this still your new or older one?
This is the new one.
Okay, see, I took this all off and the cover page said it was adopted in January 2024, but I picked it up like 2 months ago.
It's all good.
All right.
Either way, it has been updated since, so we'll get you the latest and greatest.
Yeah, and this gives you a little bit of, you know, strategic plan. This isn't exactly how it goes in an EOA as much. Strategic plans are really much more economic development focused. The EOA is a little bit more comp plan, but it will have an implementation piece where you start taking a look at, here's what we're trying to accomplish, here's why it's important, here's our goal, and here's the actual tasks associated with it. The implementation plan, you know, if the city gets to the point where they need to, you know, move their urban growth boundary to accommodate more, they've got to basically make a call to start that process, which is a different process again. Following an EOA, you need EOA findings to support that next process, but that's another step. And that's not exactly what the EOA is supposed to be getting at. The EOA is supposed to decide if you've got enough. And if you don't, then you go to the next stage. Other ones out there, Mid-Willamette Council of Governments has a comprehensive economic development strategy, has a whole bunch of objectives out there that they're looking for. And again, you want to tie the objectives for a jurisdiction. You really want to set the policy framework. So you're setting out a goal objective and then your policies follow from it. So it makes logical sense. And you should be doing that anyways. You decide where you're trying to go, and then you figure out how you're going to get there. Again, we'll be tying into the Mid-Willamette Valley Council as well as the county's information. When we take a look at target industries, we'll look at your current concentration. That means who's actually in your community. Those are basically companies that your community has shown an ability to attract, right? And quite often they're there because there's a good reason to have that type of business in the community. Occasionally they're there just for pure random chance. You know, we've worked in communities that have a door manufacturer just because, you know, someone's kid moved there and brought the business, you know, 40 years ago, and they just sort of been there forever. There isn't always a reason, but basically you have concentrations. You guys obviously on the antiquing side, you have a huge concentration. But obviously around, you know, the airport, you've got a concentration of aviation uses, which is exactly what you'd expect, because you've got some real advantages on the aviation side. The growth prospects, which is which industries are expected to grow. So you take a look at national information, you look at state forecasts, regional forecasts, and take a look at the actual industries we're seeing growing locally to get which ones have good prospects to grow in the future. When we talk about attractive characteristics, a lot of times this becomes a target piece because you need to decide, is this an industry I want to actually target because it has really good employment characteristics? It has a lot of spin-off industries. They're high-wage jobs. It's, you know, it's a clean industry. A lot of different reasons why a jurisdiction may find it attractive. And you say, I'd really like employment in this industry in the future. It may just be, you know, people like health services in their community, not just because it has good employment, but also it provides an important service to local residents, which they value as well. And then we look at this regional statewide targets, see if some of those are appropriate locally, your local advantages, you know, and you've got proximity to I-5, you've got a historic nature, you've got along the I-5 corridor is important. You've got, you know, the airport proximity is a big advantage. Then you look for high impact ones, a lot of times traded sector, which is sort of your export employment. that's basically industries that bring net new money into the community. And most economic development agencies will tend to focus on the traded sector ones because they're seen as having relatively high impact on local incomes, revenues, other employment opportunities. And so we'll run through that next time. We'll give you a bunch of data to back this up, what's everybody saying, and then we'll get everybody's feedback on target industries. We'll propose a bunch, but you guys can add more or take them away as you feel. Again, we want to get as much feedback as possible. And so our next meeting is going to be the trends analysis, the initial target industry screening, and the TAC meeting, where we basically go through our findings and get your feedback on the findings and see where you guys, you know, think are the pathways forward on this, how to, you know, what we're seeing out there and what you're, help us to read the data again. That sets up for the next stage. We'll also probably come back again with the BLI just to make sure, with any refinements, to make sure that that's still where we feel everything's good. And the third meeting, it'll be the reconciliation between the two and how do we feel about that. I think that's currently the plan as we go forward. This may make more meetings if it gets, if we go off on a tangent somewhere or we find something interesting. And again, not all tangents are bad. Sometimes the tangents are good. You know, we'll go through and think we understand a community and we'll be wrong and totally open for that. I mean, I'm an economic forecaster. I'm wrong all the time. So just count on that. But we're very open to the fact that we want to get your feedback and make sure it's the best estimate going forward. And so that finishes off my sort of formal set piece for this. What I'd be actually really interested now is just sort of comments on where you guys see the community and, you know, basic goals and objectives for, we've got to come up with a vision statement for the city of Aurora. And as Joseph outlined, the city's got some ideas of, you know, making sure to accommodate their growth, maybe incorporating the airport over time within city limits, those types of pieces. We can talk about those goals, industries you really think that the city should be focused on. Anything else you see? I mean, we're very quick on this thing so far, but again, this is a difficult meeting because we don't have any data to discuss because nothing's been done yet except this PowerPoint. So,
well, I'd like to hear from the committee members. We'll just go around the room in order of the way people are seated. Next to me is Bruce.
I'd like to say, as a neighbor of the city, the Aurora Airport, it has huge economic opportunity. And as you probably all know, that there's more jobs at the airport than there is residents in the city of Aurora. It's not in the city, and I don't think it should be, because an airport is a really specific. It's not a city. Historically, cities and airports can be bad for each other in that people build houses right off the end of a runway and then are impacted by the sound of aircraft, as has happened with Charbonneau. Planning can prevent that. And that's what I'm here to hope that we can work out. The city of the airport has been actually restricted. Its economic opportunity is held back by Mr. Schaefer individually and the city of Aurora. So there's been some real, we don't have a real good past. The city of Aurora, of course, the chamber was for years really active and had a very good relationship with the airport. The airport supports the city. We pay hundreds of thousands into the fire department, the schools, but there is that the problem of building houses off the end of a runway and then being impacted by the sound of aircraft. So protecting that is a real important goal. I can see on other neighboring industries, agriculture. The city of Aurora is surrounded, as is the Aurora Airport, by very successful large agricultural operations. a lot of employment there. And those make good neighbors for an airport. So doing things above the table and with communication, I hope we can get something done.
Okay. Tyler?
Yeah, Tyler Meskers with Oregon Flowers. I didn't mention it earlier, but I'm on the Planning Commission. I want to make sure that's on the record. New to the Planning Commission, but what I've learned is to just look at things with just common sense. So I think I'd agree with a house next to a runway makes no common sense at all. However, seeing the economic opportunity in the city of Aurora and being here my whole life and seeing what Aurora was 35 years ago and what it is now. However, looking at other neighboring cities such as Hubbard, Woodburn, Canby, Wilsonville, the growth that has happened there is just far bigger than what this city has done. So I'm just interested to see what this city will look like in the next 30 years and what the census is that everybody here on this committee thinks the city should become. But yeah, there's challenges involved to make sure that we plan this accordingly. If there is growth, taking account for the airport, keeping in mind small business, I'm a small business owner myself. So I think that's passionate to grow in a city. I think a lot of businesses give back to the city a lot, like the White Rabbit, the bakeries in town, the restaurant. I think our business is an example of that as well. So making sure it's good growth is what I'm interested to make sure happens. So yeah, that's my two cents. Very new to this meeting and here to learn and hope that we can find a good path forward for the city.
Thank you. Stu?
Yeah, I'm here because the city is very strategically located for industrial development, which is a common neighbor to airports. And there's not very many airports in the country that you fly around and you don't see industrial buildings around them. They're good neighbors for airports. The airport is a strategic asset, whether it's in the city or not. I'm not here to comment on that, but I'm familiar. I've done a lot of business with Nike and Intel over the years. And the Hillsborough Airport is a strategic partner with them in their endeavors. And this is a very strategic location for a lot of industrial businesses. And we have a huge shortage, as Matt will testify, Corey, and Jerry knows as well, of developable industrial land in the Willamette Valley. It's almost silly how few sites there are to buy right now that are ready to develop. And with this location, with direct access to I-5, it's very fertile. Industrial neighbors are good neighbors. They generate some traffic during the week. They're not there during the weekend. They don't put huge strains on your tax base. On your services, but they provide a great deal of tax base. So the reason I guess why I'm here, and Joe knows that, is, again, we have an acute shortage of industrial land. We need good industrial land. Flat land is important. Obviously, we drive down here, there's a lot of flat land.
Thank you, Stu. Looking up to our TAC members who are on Zoom, Kelly?
Hi, thanks. You know, I honestly don't have a lot to add. I'm here to listen to what Aurora's goals are and see how we can either support them or help provide information. So I don't have a lot to add. It's not my place to tell Aurora how you want to develop. But.
Okay, Kurt, anything you would like to add?
No, nothing to add. You know, my experience with Aurora is a lot of looking at maps online and seeing things in print. I don't have a lot of on the ground knowledge, so I'm here to listen, learn, and fulfill my role.
Okay, thank you. And then Matt.
Yeah, not a lot to contribute here. I think Wilsonville, as most cities in Oregon, if not all, are very supportive of the concept of home rule and self-determination. And so to that end, very supportive of Aurora's aspirations. As far as the airport goes, you know, Wilsonville's stance on airport expansion and whatnot is pretty well documented. And I know that there are meetings that have occurred recently between the city of Wilsonville and ODAV, and I haven't participated in those and not equipped to speak to that, but would just underscore that Wilsonville has been proactive in its planning and grown as a consequence and fully supportive of other cities that have similar aspirations.
Thank you. Alex.
Hey, I would echo the wise words of Kelly from Marion County. I think she said it very well. But, you know, by the way, it was a very great presentation. It was great, especially for me being new in the role. And as far as, you know, the airport and, you know, we would remain neutral on whether or not the airport remains annexed or not. We, you know, we wouldn't be against it. We would not be necessarily for it either. So, you know, we'd remain neutral on that and help out anywhere we can throughout the process with it, whichever way it goes.
Thank you. Julie.
I think that growth is good. I think it's inevitable. I do think it needs to be controlled. And I think that's kind of the purpose of this, is figuring out what that vision is for Aurora. I think we'll, in maybe our next meeting, we'll get closer to maybe talking with more data from, I believe that in this growth, you know, whether it be industrial, which again, as it has been stated, we have very limited property here in Aurora for that. I do think we are given to industrial agricultural here. Revenue, of course, would be a great part of our growth, generating more revenue for the city of Aurora. And I believe that one of the number one for me as a new resident of Aurora for the last 3 years, and I live on Airport Road, I would like to see the airport be more inclusive in the city of Aurora. I think that is one of the number one major steps to broadening our growth as a city. And I just hope that we can come to something that is a more collaborative and agreeable vision for everybody here in Aurora.
Thank you. This is Joseph here. I agree with everything Julie has just said. And I would add, and I know it's a sensitive subject, but from my perspective, the city of Aurora and the city of Wilsonville and myself personally have not held the airport back. What we have said is that the airport needs to grow consistent with the rules. And I think we have demonstrated that the airport has attempted to grow without following the rules. And so my personal goal here is to help bring the airport in compliance with the rules. And at least, you know, that's part of what this EOA is. In terms of, you know, my vision or thoughts about the growth of the city, a few years ago, I described it to Ted Millar and his eyes went up and he said, "Oh, you mean Scottsdale?" And I said, "Excuse me?" He goes, "Oh, what you're describing is like the Scottsdale Airport," which I have not been to before. But I subsequently looked it up and would encourage everyone to look at it. If you look at the Scottsdale runway, it's oriented sort of east, northeast to south, to west, southwest. And if you look at the east side of the runway, north of the runway, they've got a sort of a finger jointed alignment of taxiways and city streets, where on one side you see buildings, commercial buildings, low rise office buildings. And I think some of them are more blue collar type. I'm not sure, I haven't actually been there. And if you were driving down the street, you would think you were in sort of Tualatin off Tualatin Sherwood Highway or something like that. But then out the back, there's the other sort of half of the finger joints, which are taxiways. So you have many businesses with access to the runway, but their front door is on a public street, like any other commercial street. I I think the city, have no intentions of adding residential use out near the airport. The city has surplus residential land on the
south end
here, the kind of orangish and tan land on the map behind me. What we do need to try to do is figure out what uses can be compatible with the airport, and that will differ, you know, based on the location. Obviously, you don't want high employment density next to the end of the runway, things like that. But we have no intention of adding more residential land closer to the airport. And I think the Scottsdale example is a good one of how to knit the airport to the community to have a transition between our residential neighborhoods that exist now and the airport that, depending how you measure it, you know, is 1,400, 1,600, 1,800 feet away from those houses.
I think it's important to understand that the Aurora hasn't broken any rules. The airport has never done anything unofficially or outlaw or everything is, aviation is extremely regulated. We deal with the Federal Aviation Administration. We document. And so the buildings out there are all exactly the same. Everything is done correctly. The misterm runway airport expansion, that's due to the runway itself is 1,000 feet below the average runway in the state of Oregon in America. And so since 1978, there's been a plan to lengthen the runway strictly for safety. It doesn't add another square inch of business land out there or employment, just lengthening the runway to make it a safer runway. And the FAA has recommended that, and they do today, and they have since 1978. But that somehow has got miscommunicated as an expansion and fought as we speak. Mr. Schaefer is in a lawsuit against the airport and some landowners, and the city of Aurora has fought from making the safety improvement for decades and has slowed the progress. So, I mean, that's not opinion or rumor. That's fact. And so it's important to keep that in consideration.
I think we're getting off the tangent of what we're trying to do here. And no offense on all of that. We understand all of those. For 25 years on the historical board here and came to town and now lived here 13 years, and so about 35 years I've been familiar with the town. This town is an incredibly wonderful,
I agree,
historical destination place worldwide. People all over have heard about this town and they want to come see it and they want to understand it. And I want to keep it that way, period. You know, the charm and the just the wonderful people that live here. I mean, everybody that lives here is just wonderful.
I'm not talking about the city of Aurora.
No, but I know.
About safety improvements.
I understand that, but I got you there.
Different subject.
I'm not going to go there. It's a different subject.
Yes.
But
yeah.
Go ahead. Can I
continue?
Sorry.
Clearly there's a lot of background in this particular issue in the community.
Right.
Perceives me that I don't understand all of it, which is actually probably for the best. But, I do think as we go through this, one of the issues is to really make sure that, you know, if the airport employment concentration, which is fairly significant, is seen as a really key economic element that we want to maintain and support and expand, then making sure the entitlements are correct, making sure you're up to FAA standards so you can actually realize your master plan. All those things, you know, need to be thought through and make sure that we actually do it. Again, on the residential should not be by airports. I mean, I think FAA, I'm sure they'd even let you get very close, but we run into that same issues with conflicts. People move in under airports, runways, and then complain about noise, right?
Right.
But this is an employment economic development piece. So our focus is really on employment lands. And if supporting the airport functions and the function of the airport, which is a strategic asset, like Stu said, a big regional strategic asset, and those employers are really significant, finding ways to make sure that they're kept healthy, right? That you've done what you can to support those industries, support the airport function operation to make sure it can support the broader community. At the same time, you know, it's, if you're going to have industrial land and keep your downtown character, to me, it seems like that land near the airport, closer to the I-5, is going to be highly marketable. You know, it's flat industrial property, which tends to be good neighbors for airports. And it also leaves your historic piece, you know, sort of untouched right there. You can sort of move a lot of that employment away and keeps the traffic flow between there and the highway as opposed to down through 99 and through the city as much. There could be some win-wins here. So when we take a look at these things, I do think you want to value the airport. We work on actually a lot of airport master plans, by the way. And so I understand the FAA issues. The FAA is pretty strict about a lot of things. They'll have a lot to say about most of these things. And almost every small airport largely depends on FAA grants to get anything done anyways. So you don't want to get them upset. So getting that mix right and figuring that out, that'll be, as we go through this process, something I think we need to aspire to. But, you know, we're not helping our economic development by in any way harming that employment concentration by the airport. We just need to make a look at what they have, what they need. Is there ways that we can enhance it? Or, you know, again, we're getting ahead of ourselves because we haven't even identified that the city needs property between there. And so I don't want to, you know, we're getting to phase three and we haven't even got to phase two yet. So we need to talk about it broader. But I do think end of the day, we've got to come up with some sort of win-win. And supporting the airport industrial cluster is going to be part of a win, I would expect.
Well, in that vision that I kind of see here is, you know, I'd like people to walk to work, not have to drive to work, have opportunities for people to live here or close to the community, ride a bike to the community, come from Wilsonville on a bike, if that's what they to some places here that make a lot of sense. For people to be employed in, you know, if we can work to get rid of some of the vehicles, you know, thinking long term, and the train, you know, we're talking about building the train over in Hubbard and down the road to go to Salem and back and forth, tapping into all of those things in this community, creating something that's totally different and unique than every cookie cutter situation we got going on all the other places that are growing. You know, Camby's, you know, all that traffic is coming through our town and it's going to get worse. And it's going to, every road around here is going to get terrible. And when they close I-5 for the next 4 or 5 days, this sometime in the future, when they're going to build the bridge, we're going to see exactly how it's going to be in a 20-year period from now. Because people are going to be finding every shortcut and every way to get around. And I, you know, we'd be ahead of that.
Just to clarify for folks who may not be familiar with the transportation around our community, the route from Canby to I-5 South goes right through our downtown. So that's what the mayor was referencing. As Canby grows, and in particular, as their industrial area grows, we see more traffic, and especially in recent years, yeah, more tractor-trailer traffic coming right through downtown Aurora.
And how can we benefit from that? You know, we don't want to be the drive-through town. How can we get them to stop, come back, spend more money here, sleep here, come in, fly in? You know, I see us using the airport as an economic driver. Come to Aurora. Come stay here. Come, we'll have wine tours out in the country. Stay, come use the airport, come stay at the hotel or the bed and breakfast, or have a community we build with bed and breakfast, or, you know, the future, we have this potential to do an incredible thing. And I just want to kind of push in that direction to make it happen.
Does your airport have fly-in events?
We have over the years, we have in the last few years, we've slowed down on those.
Okay. There was one in Astoria, and they do the fly-ins, and then it helps the tourism sector a little bit too.
But weren't we going to have that really big from vans. Everybody in the world was going to come here. Then we got the COVID deal.
Yep.
It was going to be hundreds and hundreds and whatever, thousands of people were to fly in here. And we were looking for places to stay. I remember that coming out, but it got canceled.
So. Again, for people who might not be familiar, Vans Aircraft is located at the airport and they manufacture kits. So you can buy a kit and put your own little airplane together with your own two hands and wrenches and such.
They're extremely popular. They build more, they sell more kits than all the general aviation manufacturers, Cessna, Beach, Piper, all the manufacturers combined sell 25% of what the kits Vans sell. So it's a worldwide significant piece of aviation right now. And the biggest kit manufacturer on the planet is right here at the Aurora Airport.
Hidden from anybody's knowledge.
Yeah.
How many people do they employ?
Around 100. I couldn't tell you off the top of the exact amount.
All right, let's
help some.
Well, those are good information for those industries, because we look at the aviation ones, you know, their location requirements are typically, you know, inside the fence at an airport, and you can't put those somewhere else. So they're very specific. I think Kelly's got a hand.
Yeah, so maybe a little off topic, but does Aurora have, I think it's called an area of interest. But I think it's the area outside of the urban growth boundary where there's evaluation for expansion.
We have an area of interest up at the airport, but it's not part of an expansion program. It's part of an intergovernmental agreement from 2010.
So it's not part of your comp plan?
Not as an area of special interest in that sense. You might be thinking of Wilsonville. The city of Wilsonville last year or the year before adopted an area of special interest around the airport.
That being Clackamas County?
Both counties.
Oh.
Did that answer your question, Kelly?
Yeah, I was just curious.
Okay.
Another thing I think significant to people that aren't real familiar with the local area is that, unfortunately, Interstate 5 backs up to a standstill twice a day, every day. Everyone's going, the commuters from the Canby, Aurora area and elsewhere, getting on Interstate 5 and going into town. And it literally comes to a standstill or a crawl, and then at 5 o'clock coming back. But fortunately, the Aurora Airport does not cause any of that, because we're going the other direction. We're affected by it, of course. We can't get out the driveway for all the people that are going by trying to avoid Interstate 5. But the appointment at Aurora is, of course, coming. Those that live in Canby or Wilsonville are coming south in the morning, whereas the flow is to the north. So that's a synergistic thing where we're using the other direction traffic. And then there are businesses that are 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and a lot of on call and a lot of employment that is around the nation, but based there. But for those of the 9 to 5 Monday through Friday workers, fortunately don't have to deal with they have to deal with, but they're not part of that traffic. Go ahead.
So, Stu, I'm interested from your take, because I've worked with you many times over the years. What sort of employment opportunities do you see, I mean, as far as types of employers out in that area?
Well, Jerry, as you know, I don't like to buttonhole projections on what's going to happen, because it causes a lot of problems with development. But, you know, it's just a strategic location. It's a wonderful little city with great access to I-5. And I mean, any business could come here. You know, the mayor mentioned biking to work. Well, you know, that's an employment area. And you're going to have pretty dense employment there with industrial development. And, you know, Jerry could be anything from tech to fulfillment centers to, you know, light assembly. Where it, you know, I was in a meeting today with a pretty significant regional employer in I-5 in the Tualatin area, and they've got a requirement for 250,000 square feet. There's nowhere to go. There's nothing. And I've seen a couple operations move overseas this year that would have expanded here locally. And it's just because we have a dearth of industrial land. It's just very simple. You know that as well as I do. And this area here is so well located. You mentioned traffic on the bridge. You know, a lot of those people driving in the morning are coming from Salem, Woodburn, Newburgh. You know, you put something down here, you intercept that. And this area down here has been fleeced for employees by Wilsonville and Tualatin for years. It's probably the best thing to say. And if you develop it, you know, you pick those guys off and you cut down the commute times and you get, you know, for your residential down there, you get local employment options. So Jerry, I just, like I say, it's, to me, looking at that property that we're talking about for industrial, it's probably as good as anything I've seen in the last 20 years right now. I wish they had more of it.
The city of Dallas, you know, down south of.
Yeah, I'm real familiar with Dallas. I've got
over 45% of the people that work there work in Portland.
Give me an
they
example.
Commute every day.
Wow. Here's a great example.
So that shocked you, because I was shocked.
I represent a company called Ascentic. That's a heavy manual. Well, not heavy. It's a very tech company. Everybody refers to it as advanced manufacturing and Tualatin. And they needed to expand. Couldn't do it. And the jobs that they needed were what you would call living wage jobs, but they were probably a little lower end than what they had in Tualatin. So we went down and bought the old Pfizer plant down there in Dallas, and they had 145 employees within a year show up. And to your point, I think 3/4 of those people were commuting to either Salem or Portland.
Yeah.
And they hired them, and they're in Dallas now, which was a plant that had been vacated for 15 years or something like that.
They can't pass the bond down there. That never passed a bond down there. They refuse to pass a bond. The people do.
Really?
Yeah. It's an interesting mix of people that live there.
But anyway, that was very successful, and that's a great story. That's exactly what you could get, Jerry. I mean, somebody that needs to tap into this workforce. It's, you know, one of the major problems we're having, certainly it's more acute in the Wilsonville, Tualatin, Hillsborough areas. You can't find people to work. They can't. There's a lot of guys that want to expand. They can't get them. And that's why Ascentive went down south. And I could see that here where somebody says, you know what, we're having a hard time tapping into guys down here. We can come down here and develop or move into an industrial park that's built here by the airport. And we've got an airport and we kind of like to fly my plane and guys come in. And it's wonderful property. I mean, I'm here for a reason. I mean, I know it's property. It's good property. Yeah.
I think to piggyback that, you know, in the nursery business, we look for a lot of employment too. Our business ourselves and surrounding nurseries as well. And being between Woodburn and Camby, we have less of an employment challenge than, say, areas of Damascus or other areas outside. So we're kind of in this perfect spot where there's, for us and our business, personal experience to find employment much easier than our colleagues. Hmm.
I think everyone's familiar with that, the bottleneck in Wilsonville. I've spent more time in Wilsonville than I intended. I'm largely sitting in I-5. But, you know, that I think that gives you strategic advantage, obviously, that you're maybe a way to truncate that particular congestion point. So do we have other comments from the committee on things you want to make sure you get out early? That is being covered, your take on something?
The only thing that I would contribute at this point, you know, Wilsonville is one of the only communities in the metro area within the metro UGB that still has undeveloped land inventory of any significant size. And the main reason why it remains undeveloped today is for lack of funding to build out infrastructure to serve those properties. So adding land is a critical first step, but a strategy for infrastructure development has to be a conversation that happens just as early as any aspiration to bring in new property for potential development. So an ongoing struggle. You know, infrastructure dollars have dried up over time, and so it's fallen to cities to figure out how to make that happen, and it's tough.
It's an excellent point too, Matt, because we've dealt with that before of communities that have employment inventory, but there's no feasible way to serve it. You know, industrial, it's paying more per square foot than it used to, but you know, a lot of these things are really unsolvable or very expensive to solve the infrastructure. So I do think when you start looking at prospective lands to expand on, you've got to take a look at, you know, what do my systems do? You know, how does it flow? We don't like to pump things, that type of stuff, to make sure that we've got a solvable either transportation system and or, you know, water, sewer, everything else that's needed for these industries, so that even if there's not a solution, it's solvable. You know, we worked with Hillsborough when they brought a lot of their land in, you know, both back in the Grand Bargain, but we worked with the urban renewal area because they had a very expensive infrastructure program to develop that area. And they actually put an urban renewal area on their industrial properties to basically pay for the infrastructure, because it was a big nut.
So, Jerry, you know that we, within the next 2.5 years, we'll have a new sewer plant and a water facility that will handle our 20-year growth and this industrial land. So we're a kind of ahead of the game. Thank goodness that we had an ice storm here. It was a very positive thing for wake up call for people that for asking for money, and we were able to, you know, obtain that. So
yeah, I looked at your infrastructure. I know where it is,
right?
And there's enough mass there on the property that we're talking about now that the city could probably avoid a bond to develop it.
Right.
In other words, the developer would come in there, make a deal with you guys. Look, I'll bring the utilities out here. I'll pay for them. You give me a catch up, and I'll pay it back. And it's real doable on that site, from what I can tell. I mean, I've been out there.
Yeah.
And looked at it.
Right. And it's a downhill flow.
And our
water will be on
capacity is on. Yeah. I like to hear what you're saying, but like I say, it's a frothy site is probably the right way to put it.
Well, I would say the mayor is being much too modest. We've been very fortunate to have him. He's been very successful in obtaining funds through various public programs, and also was a leader in our bond, which is also contributing money to infrastructure.
We're not done yet.
We're not done.
Not done yet.
Lots of authority left.
There's lots of begging going on. Each of your walls will get fleeced on the way out. No, I'm just kidding.
Well, that's good, because what you don't want to tell a prospective employer is the city's got a 10-year plan to address that.
Oh, we're ahead of that. Thank goodness. Some people were pretty smart. Bill was part of that, making us have plans, and that helped. Because when we were ready to go, when we had a problem, and that was a big, 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 big help. So,
well, good. Okay. I mean, I don't know if we've got more to talk about. I mean, I really appreciate everybody's time on this. This is it's a good group, a lot of good ideas. Well, you'll have a lot more to chew on next meeting, so it gives you more to comment on. We don't have a lot of shrinking violets, which is good as well. We'll need everybody. More participation is better. I always feel like if I volunteered to come to one of these meetings, they're going to have to listen to me. I'm going to give you my opinion.
That's exactly.
Hoping everyone feels the same way. You know, we're wasting your time, so make sure you get your say. So we'll coordinate the next meeting through Joseph, get back to everybody. In the interim, if anyone's got any comments on the materials they've seen, feel free to direct them to me. You can either send it through Joseph or me directly, either way.
Or to Kurt Fisher from the COG, who's our city planner and manager of this process.
Okay.
He's on the email trail, I presume.
Yeah,
he's on that trail.
Yeah.
All right. Well, very good. I'm not going to litigate your airport thing, by the way. That's on you guys. Not in my scope. But, you know, again, we do value those things. We want to make sure that they're kept, everyone's kept whole and everyone feels good at the end of the process, ideally, or at least heard. So with that, I guess I don't want to waste any more of your time, so we can close it out, unless you've got anything more, Joseph.
No, just a thank you to everyone who came. And also, I want to thank Bruce for bringing his airport friends. That was a pleasant surprise. Normally, when we have meetings like this, there's the committee and nobody else. So it's good to see interest and participation.
Glad to be here.
There's a lot of people who are interested in the airport and the city and what's going on. The number of people who are willing to give up their time and participate and come to meetings is much more limited. So that's appreciated.
Glad to be here. Thank you.
Good.
Thanks for having me.
Glad to come.
Thank you, everybody.
Okay, we'll see you again soon.
Thank you.
Good bridge now.